This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Pafizkar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every year. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel carries out fresh airstrikes across the Gaza Strip shortly after shelling the central part of the besieged territory. Calls are growing for the release of the body cam video of the recent fatal police shooting of a black man in the U.S. state of North Carolina. Also ahead, hopes of rescuing dozens aboard a missing Indonesian submarine are fading as its oxygen reserves are believed to have run out. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, Israeli forces have carried out fresh attacks against targets in the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent Ashraf Shannon for more details.
Israeli fighter jets just began a campaign of air attacks against the Gaza Strip. They hit Hamas training center that belongs to Hamas's Idlib Kitsan brigades. In northern Gaza, they also had a Hamas security post in the southern Gaza Strip out of Rafah. And earlier, Israeli tanks destroyed a Hamas security post in the east of the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Al Buraj. This latest Israeli violence comes amid angry protests in the Gaza Strip throughout the night to condemn the Israeli violence against Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds, while Palestinian resistance groups have warned the Israeli regime against these violations in Jerusalem al-Quds. And the Israeli media has reported that around 10 homemade rockets and projectiles were fired from the Gaza Strip against the Israeli regime, and that the so-called Israel missile interception system has failed to intercept most of these rockets that were fired.
As Ashraf was saying, the Israeli police have attacked Palestinians protesting against restrictions on gatherings during the holy month of Ramadan in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Israeli soldiers fired water cannons as well as live ammunition to disperse protesters in the Old City. Palestinians threw stones at regime forces and smashed security cameras. 8 demonstrators were injured in the violence. The protests came after Israeli forces tried to prevent them from holding their usual annual Ramadan evening gatherings outside the Old City's Damascus Gate by erecting metal barriers. Similar clashes also took place around military checkpoints in several areas in the occupied West Bank. Tensions have been running high in Al-Quds since the start of Ramadan. On Thursday alone, over 100 Palestinian protesters were injured in clashes with Israeli forces. Early on Thursday, a Syrian surface-to-air missile exploded near Israel's Dimona nuclear plant, while Israel has launched an investigation into the incident. Many say the explosion shows a failure in the regime's military capabilities. Maryam Saleh is in Beirut.
The Israeli regime seems to be living in an unprecedented state of restlessness after a rocket reached what the Dimona mayor calls the most secure area in the world. Many observers consider the event as a clear intelligence and defense failure, whether the rocket was purposely aimed at the Dimona nuclear site or not.
There is much confusion among the Israelis. This unprecedented breach led the Israelis to question the capability and readiness of the Israeli home front and the capability of the military and political leadership. They are linking this event with other events in the region, mainly concerning Iran and Syria.
The military official statement changed its story on the explosion in an apparent confusion, first saying a Patriot rocket hit the Syrian rocket, while a later statement admitted that Israeli defenses failed to intercept it. Israel claims that SA-4, a long-range projectile handled by Syria's Russian-made S-200 missile system, had been fired at an Israeli aircraft to defend Syria from an Israeli attack, but had, quote, overflown its target and landed near the Dimona nuclear reactor. Israeli media have questioned the official clarification.
There are several questions that the Israeli army needs to ask itself. In the heart of this, there are continuous operations of the Israeli Air Force against Iranian targets in Syria. We have to say honestly, we began this. It began with the attack of the Air Force on Syria, and the Syrians always launch air defense rockets. The Israeli army's analysis is that if they wanted to target the Dimona reactor to retaliate for Natanz operation, they would have fired a more precise missile.
The missile incident came days after Iran warned that it will retaliate for a recent Israeli cyber attack against its Natanz nuclear facility. While the Israeli regime continuously targets Iran's nuclear facilities, it exclusively maintains a military nuclear program and arsenal with hundreds of nuclear warheads, which threaten the entire MENA region.
There is clear that the West is overlooking the Israeli nuclear program, despite the fact that everyone knows that this secretive facility holds a military nuclear reactor for around 60 years now. They have an arsenal of tens of nuclear warheads. This nuclear threat is part of the Western hegemony over the region, and it was originally built by the West.
Analysts believe this event foreshadows a certain incapability of the Israeli military to protect its home front in the case of a war with the resistance, which could fire tens of rockets daily. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Officials and protesters in the U.S. state of North Carolina are demanding the police departments make public the body camera footage of an encounter that resulted in the death of a black man. State and local officials say the footage needs to be released before public anger over the incident grows further. On Wednesday, 42-year-old Andrew Brown Jr. was fatally shot by a sheriff's deputy in Elizabeth City. The sheriff's office has declined to share much information about the incident. It says the shooting happened after Brown fled from the police while they were going to serve him an arrest warrant for drug-related charges. The incident occurred amid ongoing protests across the U.S. over the killing of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement officers. With a conviction in the George Floyd case, accountability for murderous cops in the U.S. states appears to have taken a long-awaited step forward. However, police brutality remains prevalent and could spark a second consecutive summer full of protests. Rami Mazahari is in Chicago.
Much of America breathed a sigh of relief when the cop who killed George Floyd was convicted of murder. A not guilty verdict was widely expected to have set off deadly rebellions on the scale of 1968 when Martin Luther King was assassinated, or 1992 when cops were acquitted in the Rodney King beating case. But across the country, there's a feeling that the calm won't last, because cops in America kill an average of 3 people per day. With police now often forced to wear body cameras and cell phones serving as citizen cameras, there seems to be a constant stream of shocking cop killings on the nightly news. North Carolina, Oklahoma, here in Chicago, and in too many other places to count, have all seen major protests against police violence in the past weeks. Storefronts are being boarded up, and many wonder if they will stay that way all summer.
I mean, if someone knocked out on election night and they woke up today and you told them everything that was happening, if they didn't really pay that much attention to politics, aside from like the media telling them that Trump is bad, they would say, oh, Trump's still in power. I feel like the cops throughout the country, even in Chicago, have become even more emboldened than last year.
The George Floyd protests in 2020 were highly politicized by the Democratic Party, but many wonder if the party will encourage the same confrontational stances in 2021. President Joe Biden reportedly discussed deploying the National Guard to all 50 states ahead of the Floyd verdict, while some Republican-led states are introducing often shocking anti-protest legislation.
The protest that we saw in 2020 was more of a prelude than anything, because now that all these facts are out there, now that, like, you know, there's a huge light shining on police violence and how this is connected to the state and how the state continually arms the police no matter what they do, even if they've just murdered a 13-year-old kid, what is the state going to propose? More money to go to cops to train them, and that training goes to nothing.
The United States has become so divided that the threat of socioeconomic violence now occurs on a regular basis. Underpinning it all appears to be the widespread perception of a lack of justice caused by a fundamental corruption which appears almost impossible to remedy. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Elsewhere, hopes of rescuing dozens aboard a missing Indonesian submarine have faded as its oxygen reserves are believed to have run out. Hundreds of military personnel have taken part in the frantic hunt for the KR-1 Nangala 402. Authorities said the German-built craft was equipped with enough oxygen for only 3 days after losing power, but that deadline passed early Saturday with still no sign of the missing vessel and its crew. Earlier, an oil spill was also spotted near the vessel's last location. 53 people were on board the submarine when it lost contact during a torpedo drill in the Bali Sea. Pakistan's parliament has deferred a debate on whether to expel the French ambassador over the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Friday's parliament session descended into rowdiness after members disagreed on how to proceed. The speaker adjourned the session indefinitely. Earlier this week, the government reached a resolution with a party called Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, or TLP, following bloody anti-France protests. The TLP waged an anti-France campaign months ago, calling for the expulsion of the French envoy. That's amid growing anger over the French government's defense to sacrilegious cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, republished by a satirical magazine. Staying in Pakistan, the country has announced strict measures in an attempt to stem the spread of the coronavirus. Authorities say the country may soon be facing a situation similar to that of India if the current surge in COVID-19 cases continues. Javed Rana reports from Islamabad.
Pakistan has called out army to help police and other paramilitary personnel to enforce strict precautionary measures in bazaars and streets to contain what the government says a sudden surge in COVID-19 cases.
Agar humne ab ityat na ki.
Prime Minister Imran Khan in a televised address warned the nation that his country may soon be facing a grim situation similar to that of India, where on an average 2,000 people die every day and more than 300,000 test positive.
I have appealed to the people time and again to follow precautionary measures. However, neither people are scared of coronavirus nor they are adopting any precautionary measures. And that is why now there is surge in coronavirus cases.
Under a new decision, Pakistan has shut down schools in regions with a surge in COVID-19 cases. All markets would be closed by 6 p.m. Indoor and outdoor dining have also been banned. Only 50% staff would be allowed to work in private and government offices, while offices would be closed at 2 p.m. On an average, 100 to 150 people die daily, while between 5,000 to 6,000 people test positive every day in 220 million populated country. So far, there are as many as 102,000 total active cases in Pakistan, while nearly 16,900 people have died since March last year. The government has warned the people to get ready to face complete lockdown of major urban centers if they do not put a mask on their faces to contain the virus.
People would die with hunger if government shuts down the cities. There would be shortage of food items like sugar, flour, and oil. What would we do then?
A survey conducted by Gallup Pakistan last month reported that 65% people believe that the government is exaggerating the threat of the COVID-19. A significant number of people suffer from allergic-linked diseases such as flu, cough, fever, and asthma, and many of them die every spring weather in parts of Pakistan. However, since March last year, the medical nomenclature in Pakistan have changed, and now most of these diseases have been officially classified as COVID-19 cases under what is medically known as PCR testing system, which many medical experts believe are churning out false positive cases. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
India's daily COVID-19 death toll has set a new record as the virus is spreading like wildfire in major cities. More than 2,600 people have died over the past 24 hours. The figure has taken the official toll to nearly 190,000 since the start of the pandemic. Over 340,000 new cases have also been reported, pushing the tally to around 16.5 million, second only to the United States. Meanwhile, in the state of Western Australia, a three-day lockdown has come into force, affecting some 2 million people. Japan has also already declared a state of emergency in Tokyo and three other prefectures just 3 months before the Olympic Games. The government announced restrictions in those regions amid a surge in cases involving new variants. Germany has introduced tougher nationwide COVID-19 measures after Parliament passed a disputed law giving the federal government powers to impose virus-related curbs. The measures limit private gatherings, sports, and shop openings in all areas where 100 cases were reported in the last 7 days. Those regions will also witness overnight curfews. In regions with higher infection rates, schools will also turn into virtual mode. The restrictions followed the enactment of a new national law dubbed the Emergency Break amid disagreements and protests. The law allows authorities to impose lockdowns on states, ending state-by-state measures. Germany has reached its highest number of new infections since January, with over 2,000 daily cases. Germany's total cases has surpassed 3.2 million, while its death toll is at over 81,000.
Brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the most merciful.
The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. The blessed month of Ramadan is the month of self-building and expurgation of the soul, as there are features in fasting which cannot be found in other worships. This is the reason why God says, "Fasting is for me, and I give its reward." Perhaps one of the factors for this exceptional is the purity and sincerity that exist in fasting. As you know, when other worships are done, people understand it, but fasting is not such. When you perform daily ritual prayer, standing toward the Holy Kaaba, genuflection and prostration show that you are praying. When you go to Hajj pilgrimage, it is something public which cannot be conducted secretly. And when you are donating your money to a poor person, it usually cannot be done secretly. Fasting is an exception in this regard because one cannot be distinguished from his appearance that he's fasting. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "Fasting is an act of worship between the servant and the Creator. Nobody becomes aware of it except the Creator, and nobody rewards it except the Creator." It is interesting to know that Lady Fatima, peace upon her, has also said on the reasons for obligation of fasting. God has designated fasting for establishment of sincerity. One of the things that nullify fasting is to put the whole head in water, but putting the head under the shower does not nullify it. If you put half of your head in water and put the other half in the air, it will not nullify fasting. Pouring water on the head too will not nullify fasting. As it has been said several times, these works will nullify fasting only when they are done intentionally. So, if a person puts his head in water negligently or forcibly, his fasting is correct. Some of the jurisprudents believe that wearing divine suit in a way that the head is placed in a special headset will not nullify fasting because the headset prevents the hair from becoming wet. But others maintain that this, even wearing diving suit with a headset, will nullify fasting. Dear friends, many of us have experienced that our needs are not met even after several times of praying and pleading to God. In these cases, we should be sure that God knows what is better for us, and He is aware of what is good for us and what is not. He says in Ayah 36 of Surah Shura, "Whatever you have been given are the wares of the life of this world. But what is with Allah is better and more lasting for those who have faith and who put their trust in their Lord. In fact, God likes to hear the voice of His servants, so we should not get bored of asking God and should be sure of His mercy upon us. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "If one knocks at a door repeatedly, the door will finally be opened." Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, also says, "When a servant insists on his demand, God will meet his demand." Well, now after a short break, you're going to hear other parts of Dua of Abu Hamza Somali, which Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, taught his companion about Abu Hamza Somali. Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, says in Abu Hamza Somali supplication, "O God, you are doer of good, and we are evil doers. So forego of the evil of what is with us, by the beauty of what is with you. My Lord, which ignorance is there that your nobility cannot engulf it, or which respite is longer than the one that you give? What is the value of our deeds before your bounties? And how can we consider our deeds to compare them with your nobility? How can your mercy that has encompassed sinners be restricted, O you who have extended your hands for mercy? My master, I swear by your dignity that if you banish me, I will not leave your door and will not give up praising you insistently because of what I have known from your generosity and nobility. You are the doer of what you wish. You punish whomever you wish and have mercy upon whomever you wish. You are not interrogated of your work. There is no conflict in your kingdom and no association in your affair and no contradiction in your ruling. Nobody protests to your administration because the creation and affairs are in your hand. My Lord, this is the position of he who has taken shelter with you and ensconced himself in your nobility and has become accustomed to your goodness and bounties. You are the generous, while your pardoning will not be narrowed, and your mercy will not dwindle, and your grace will not decrease. Indeed, we have put our trust in your old foregoing and great grace and vast mercy. My Lord, is it possible you see you opposite to our optimism or nullify our aspirations? Never, O noble. This is not the way we think of you, and this is not our hope in you. My Lord, we have long and ample hope on you. We have disobeyed you while we hope you will cover our sins. We have called you and hope that you will answer us. Our guardian, materialize our hope. Our sins are before you. O God, we seek forgiveness for our sins and return to you. You had mercy on us with bounties while we confronted you with sins. Your goodness is pouring down upon us while our evil ascends to you. Always evil deeds come to you from us, but this does not prevent you from engulfing us in your bounties and favoring us with your gifts. You are glorious. How forbearing and great and noble you are. You are the initiator of good and returner of it. My God, your grace is greater and your forbearance is vaster than being compared with my act and flaw. So pardon me, pardon me, pardon me, my master, my master, my master.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Amid talks in Vienna aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which the United States unilaterally withdrew from, an act of terrorism has targeted a nuclear site in Iran.
Iran is blaming Israel for an apparent attack on an underground nuclear facility. The Iranians have called Sunday's explosion nuclear terrorism.
The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says a small explosion at the Natanz nuclear facility led to an electricity outage that caused minor damage to the facility's operations. Iran's permanent representative to Vienna-based international organizations has noted that despite the act of sabotage, enrichment at Natanz has not stopped. Kazem Gharibabadi, who described the attack as desperate, has said that past experience shows Iran will emerge stronger. Words that have been echoed by Iranian nuclear energy chief Ali Akbar Salehi. Iran says emergency power at the site has allowed the enrichment process to continue. Tehran says the person
who caused the incident has also been identified. More importantly, Iran has accused the Israeli regime and the United States of being behind the terror act. Israel has not publicly claimed responsibility. Likewise, the White House has denied any involvement.
Well, we of course have seen the reports of the incident at the Natanz enrichment facility. The U.S. was not involved in any manner. We have nothing to add on speculation about the causes or the impact.
However, sources have told Israeli media that the regime's spy agency had carried out a cyber operation. The New York Times has also quoted unnamed U.S. and Israeli intelligence officials as saying Israel played a role. The timing of the attack spoke volumes. It occurred during a visit by U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to occupy the Jerusalem al-Quds.
I was also grateful for the opportunity to meet with the Prime Minister to discuss a number of security issues that are important to our two countries. And I wanted to reaffirm the administration's strong commitment to Israel and to the Israeli people.
Analysts say Tel Aviv could not have carried out this operation alone without knowledge, cooperation, or direct participation with Washington. In a letter to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, Iran's foreign minister described the attack as deliberate and a war crime. There have been no statements of condemnation from the United States and other world powers, such as the Europeans. It all coincides with efforts in Vienna aimed at bringing the United States back to the Iran nuclear deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Meanwhile, Israel has strongly opposed the Iran nuclear deal and the lifting of any sanctions on Iran. It strongly supported President Trump's maximum pressure approach towards Iran and has opposed any attempts by the Biden administration to return to the accord or lift any sanctions. This is while Israel has nuclear bombs and is believed to be in possession of up to 400 nuclear warheads. Only last month, satellite images showed that Israel has been carrying out major expansion operations at its Dimona nuclear weapons plant. On the other hand, according to every intelligence agency on the planet, Iran's nuclear program is one of a peaceful nature. The act of terrorism at Natanz follows a pattern of terror attacks against Iran's nuclear program that Tehran accuses America and Israel of implementing. In 2010, a powerful computer virus called Stuxnet targeted Iran's nuclear facilities. Between 2010 and 2012, four Iranian scientists were martyred on Iranian soil. Two of the killings were carried out with magnetic bombs attached to the target's cars. One was shot dead, and another was killed following a motorcycle bomb explosion. In November 2011, an explosion at a munitions depot belonging to Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps in a Tehran suburb martyred at least 36 people, including General Hassan Mokaddam. In November 2020, Iran blamed Israel for being behind the assassination of one of its most prominent nuclear scientists. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who headed the country's Defense Ministry's Research and Innovation Organization. In July 2020, Natanz was also targeted by an explosion that damaged a facility making advanced centrifuges. Last July, a fire broke out at the same site. However, Iran says no level of assassinations or explosions will prevent Tehran from expanding its nuclear program. In the aftermath of the martyrdom of Fakhrizadeh, the Iranian parliament passed a bill that allowed the country
to resume enrichment of uranium up to 20% purity, as was the case before the JCPOA. New advanced centrifuges are also being installed at Natanz. Furthermore, Iran's top negotiator at the Vienna talks says the Islamic Republic has informed the International Atomic Energy Agency of a plan to immediately start 60% uranium enrichment. This is the highest figure ever that Iran has enriched uranium.
We send a letter to the agency that we are going to add 1,000 more centrifuges to Natanz facility. That is in addition to the current number of machines. Also today, we just send a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%.
The White House spokesperson described the ramping up of uranium enrichment by Iran as provocative.
Take seriously Iran's provocative announcement of its intention to begin enriching uranium to 60%, which the P5 plus one should be unified in rejecting.
The problem of U.S. police brutality and violence and the links to white supremacism is hundreds of years old. One officer like Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who knelt on the neck of George Floyd, leading to Floyd's death, facing a jail term, will not change the entire system. We now present you an article written by Richard Sudan, a journalist, writer, and television reporter. The piece is titled, Chauvin is Guilty, but the system is bigger than Chauvin and it must change. News that Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who knelt on the neck of George Floyd, leading to Floyd's death, had been found guilty on all charges, has been welcomed by millions of people. All across the United States and also around the world, the manner in which former police officer Derek Chauvin took the life of George Floyd, while staring brazenly and defiantly into the camera, comfortable in the knowledge that he believed he could get away with murder, outraged almost everyone that saw it. And the fact that Derek Chauvin will now be held accountable for his actions, one would hope, would provide some measure of solace to the family of George Floyd, who are still grieving the loss of a loved one whose death sparked mass protests of indignation and fury around the world. Derek Chauvin deserved this day of reckoning and to pay the price for his actions, although it will take several weeks for the judge presiding over the case to announce the sentence for Derek Chauvin. And although many feel Chauvin should have faced a charge of first-degree murder, the family of George Floyd deserved nothing less than seeing Chauvin behind bars for the rest of his life. But it is vital at this stage to remember that justice in one case will not repair a broken system, which in many people's view is working as it was designed and intended to. There is a mode of thinking which persists and which suggests that the problem of unchecked police brutality and violence in the United States can be thought of in terms of a few bad apples, and therefore that dealing with rotten individuals within the police force will fix things. While individuals who commit murder while wearing police uniform must be held accountable, the idea that they are the exception rather than the rule is simply not true. according to the FBI, the institutional corruption and the infiltration of law enforcement from those with white supremacist ideologies is a deep-seated and long-standing problem in the United States. The FBI staff have themselves published several reports on this matter. For those who understand the history of the United States, the scale and depth of the issue is simply the modern chapter of the continued legalized brutality against black communities, beginning since the days of slavery and the inception of the country. The police, of course, have their literal roots in slave-catching gangs. That history has never been accounted for, and the legacy of it continues to this day with deadly consequences. The entire U.S. criminal justice system is riddled with people belonging to white supremacist organizations. We hear about the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, but the reality is that there are countless groups which have those leanings and affiliations. Many believe that part of the reason the United States refuses to designate the Proud Boys as a terrorist group, despite their involvement in the 6th of January Washington riots, which was described as an act of domestic terrorism by the FBI, is because too many current serving police officers would be implicated. The problem of police brutality and violence and the links to white supremacism is hundreds of years old. One police officer like Derek Chauvin facing a jail term will not change the entire system, but it might be purportedly a step in the right direction. Each and every police officer guilty of the kind of violence we saw from Derek Chauvin must face the full force of the law, which of course they themselves are supposed to uphold. If Derek Chauvin is given the sentence he deserves, his case must set a precedent, move forward and deter other police officers from behaving like him. Police officers must be punished for racist killings and murdering with impunity. If they know they face the prospect of jail and will also lose their pensions, they will be deterred from carrying out such acts. It's a question of power and money, the days of police officers knowing that they automatically have the benefit of the doubt, no matter what their behavior, must come to an end. The energy and momentum and public outcry over the case of Derek Chauvin must now be directed towards all cases of police violence and injustice with lethal consequences. Recently, much was made of George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which many hope will become law. But what is not being talked about so much is the fact that this measure would actually allocate the police hundreds of millions more dollars, in theory, to ensure that they improve policing methods and to bolster their budgets in this regard. But if the police are given more money while being entrusted to police themselves, the move could spell potential disaster. New legislation might come into fruition, but if rules already exist which the police are meant to follow but they do not follow, what difference will it make? Again, to reiterate, the overarching problem is an issue of the abuse of power, which needs to be punished because police officers are already breaking the law when they unjustly kill with impunity. But rarely are they charged, and tragically, we have already seen a sobering reminder of the grim reality of things on the very day that Derek Chauvin was found guilty. Approximately half an hour before the verdict of Derek Chauvin was announced, news broke that a 16-year-old teenage black girl named Makia Bryant had been shot dead by a white police officer in Columbus, Ohio. Police say Makia Bryant was carrying a knife when they arrived at the scene. which others say had actually been dropped just moments before she was shot. Makia Bryant was believed to have been carrying the knife due to her involvement in a fight in which she was defending herself and is said to have called the police herself. Critics are arguing that whatever had taken place, the police officers firing several shots killing Bryant was excessive and reflective of a trigger-happy stance which police automatically have towards black people compared to white people, and certainly not how they should have handled this situation. Many are commenting that there was no attempt by the police to de-escalate the situation and that lethal force should have been a last resort. Tragically, it seems it wasn't. The facts of this case are still being established, but if what we are hearing about this case is true, it serves as yet another reminder amid the backdrop of the Derek Chauvin case of just how much work is yet to be done to change the state of affairs regarding violent policing in the United States. African Americans are not safe in the United States with the police operating as they currently do. There are countless cases of black people actually calling the police for help, who then end up dead as a result. Until we see a consistent trend developing of police officers continually being charged and jailed, sending a clear and strong enough message to force a change in the culture of policing, the problem will persist. And where there might seem to be a veneer of change, where in fact there is none, things could even get worse.
The lights.
A museum in London has transformed its gift shop into a mini supermarket selling artist-designed food to help an industry largely affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The Design Museum has reopened its shop with the help of 10 artists. It sells essential products with packaging designed by emerging artists. The market offers goods at the same price of normal markets, both online and at a marketplace. The initiative is led by Camille Walala, who says her project is aimed at supporting the artists reeling from the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, the project is to support artists, and I think because obviously at the moment there's no exhibition, people can't really show any of their creative work, and it's nice to have like a feedback when you're creative. It's nice to know, you know, if people like your work. I think this is a really nice platform to just bring artwork on like everyday product, and actually people are going to probably come and just buy them and probably keep them as a piece of art, like, you know, an affordable piece of art from some artists that you like. I think it's a really nice way to display art, so yeah, I think.
Walala says the project also conveys the message that creativity is as important for living as the other essentials. She says the creative supermarket will also help the museum, which has seen a drop of more than 90% in income because of the pandemic. The shop is open for just 5 days, but artists expect heavy demand. In Hong Kong schools, robots are helping children with autism to live a better life. These robots are part of an educational program called Robot for Autism Behavioral Intervention, or RABI. It's designed for individuals with autism between 3 and 18 years of age and aims to make them more social. The robots engage the children with role-playing and verbal interaction, helping them to resolve issues such as conflicts and bullying. The program was developed by a Hong Kong professor, Catherine So. She says the program will help fight social deprivation of a certain group of people.
We would believe that RABI can help them to,
improve their social and behavioral skills, and in turn, enhancing their quality of their life. So to reduce being excluded in the society, and also help them to be included in the future.
Catherine says using robots also helps keep the program structured and predictable, as autistic people are hypersensitive to voices and facial expressions. The program she launched in 2015 has now been adopted in more than 20 nonprofit groups and public schools in the country. More than 1,200 children have used it so far.
The worldwide trends show people rapidly moving toward modern vehicles now, especially electric cars. But Parisians saw a very unusual kind of EV driving around the city, similar to the one people were using over a century ago. A replica of the 1881 vehicle by French inventor Gustave Trouve was made to celebrate what is regarded as the 140th anniversary of the first viable electric car. Trouve, who is believed to have driven the world's first electric car, combined a rechargeable battery and a cycle, something very similar to a modern e-bike. The car has a motor to assist you, but you can still